When Joseph turns 17, he sees his brothers doing wrong and gives his father a bad report about how they are keeping the sheep. The brothers are furious with Joseph because of the report, but more importantly, they are also furious because they know their father loves Joseph more than them. Israel has already given Joseph a special coat dyed with many different colors, and they are so angry with Joseph that they cannot even speak civilly with him. One night, Joseph has a dream in which he sees each of his brothers as stalks of wheat, but his stalk rises above the others as they bow down to his. So Joseph tells the story to his brothers, and it just makes the relationships worse. Well, in another dream, Joseph sees the sun, the moon, and his father and brothers bowing down to him. Israel rebukes Joseph for telling the dream, and the brothers even become more jealous. The brothers are tending the flocks in Shechem when Israel sends Joseph to check on them. Arriving in Shechem, he does not find them there because they have moved to greener pastures in Dothan. So Joseph follows them, and his brothers see him coming at a distance. But Reuben stops them. Reuben schemes to have them put Joseph in a hole so he can rescue him later and return him safely to his father, thereby restoring his relationship with his father that he had tarnished when he defiled his father's concubine. Well, while Reuben is gone, they make a decision to put Joseph in the hole and sell him for 20 pieces of silver to the Ishmaelite cousins when they pass by. The Ishmaelites buy him and take him on to Egypt. When Reuben returns from the field to rescue Joseph, the hole is empty. "What am I to do?" Reuben asks. "Where am I to go?" His hope to find favor with his father's eyes has evaporated. The boys take Joseph's coat and they dip it in blood and they return it to Israel. "Your son is dead," they tell him. Israel weeps bitterly. In Egypt, the Ishmaelites do not keep Joseph, but they sell him as a slave to Potiphar. He is the bodyguard captain of Pharaoh. Well, with the sale of Joseph and the mourning of Israel, Judah leaves the family and he marries a Canaanite woman by the name of Shua, who gives him three sons, Onan, and Shelah. Marries Tamar, but he is so evil that the Lord kills him. Judah tells Onan to perform his duties to give Tamar a son in his brother's name, but Onan refuses to perform the act properly to conceive a child, so the Lord kills him too. The third son, Shelah, is too young, so Judah tells Tamar to remain a widow until Shelah is old enough to perform his duties. Tamar leaves Judah's house, returns to her father's home, and remains a widow. Many years later, Judah's wife dies. In his grief, Judah decides to take his sheep to graze near the place where he met her. Tamar hears of Judah's plans, removes her widow's garb, and dresses like a temple harlot, veil and all. By this time, Shelah is grown, and Judah should have given him to Tamar to do his duty as he promised. Judah sees Tamar veiled as a harlot and hires her services, but he does not have the money with him. However, she is willing to take a pledge as a seal, so she takes his cord and his staff. Instead of money, she wants a baby lamb for payment. Back at the flock, Judah sends the baby lamb as he promised to the harlot as payment, but the servants cannot find her. When the servants return with the news, Judah forgets about the seal, the cord, and the staff, not wanting to make an issue out of it at all. 3 months pass, and Judah hears that Tamar is pregnant after acting like a harlot. He wants to burn her, so he sends for her. Upon her arrival, she shows Judah the seal, the cord, the staff, and he knows that he is the sinner. He had not kept his promise. Tamar gives birth to twins. One stuck his hand out, and the midwife tied a red thread on it so everyone would know which one came out first. However, the other brother came out first, and she named him Perez, and the second Zephra. Now, Joseph finds favor with Potiphar and is faithful to him. Potiphar places him in charge of all that he has, including his wife, who is attracted to Joseph. She tries to seduce him, but he will not have relations with her. She grabs him. He runs, leaving his cloak behind. Spurned, she lies to Potiphar about the situation. Potiphar puts Joseph in jail, but even there he finds favor with the jailer, who ultimately places him in charge of all the prisoners. Whatever Joseph does, the Lord blesses and prospers him. Pharaoh becomes furious with his wine tasters and his baker and throws them in jail. They both have dreams and both come to Joseph for an interpretation. Joseph tells the wine taster that he will return to his position with Pharaoh in 3 days. But he tells the baker that on the third day he will hang on a tree and the birds will eat his flesh. Sure enough, on the Pharaoh's birthday, he does just as Joseph predicts. Reinstated, Joseph asks the wine tester not to forget him, but he does, at least for 2 years. Jacob, who is now called Israel, goes to Isaac, who is 180 years old and living in Mamre, also called Hebron, where he lies on his deathbed. When he dies, Israel and Esau bury him in the cave, which Abraham purchased at Sarah's death. 2 full years later, Pharaoh has a dream, but no one can interpret it. The wine taster remembers Joseph and suggests that he might be able to interpret it. Pharaoh brings out Joseph, who interprets his dream. There will be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, Joseph says. So Pharaoh names Joseph second in command of his whole kingdom. Joseph builds storehouse cities to store the grain and other supplies, and he gathers these supplies by taxing the people 20% of all they earn and grow. Finally, after 13 years in Egypt's prison system, Pharaoh dresses Joseph, 30 years old, in royal clothing, giving him the daughter of Potiphar as his wife. The land of Egypt is bountiful for the next 7 years. So much grain is stored that they stop measuring it. And during these wonderful years, the Lord blesses Joseph with 2 boys named Manasseh and Ephraim. Just as predicted, the famine begins across the entire world, and Egypt is the only nation prepared. The storehouses feed the Egyptians and anyone who comes to buy grain. In the second year of the famine, 1903 BC, Israel hears of the food in Egypt and sends all his sons except Benjamin to buy grain. Now, Joseph recognizes his brothers when they come to buy, but they do not recognize him. And he remembers his dreams about his fathers bowing to him from 20 years before. He calls them spies and they plead with him, so he gives them a test. They are to send one of their brothers while their other brothers remain there in jail. He puts them all in jail while they decide who will go and who will stay. At the end of 3 days, he removes them from the jail and gives them the opportunity to follow his instructions. Reuben, now 59, speaks up to his brothers, complaining that all of this calamity has come upon them because of what they did to Joseph many years ago when he warned them not to hurt him. Even though Joseph has been speaking to them through an interpreter, he understands Reuben's Hebrew. Joseph changes his mind and gives orders to fill their bags, and he sends them home. He also orders them to put the money back in their bags too. But he keeps Simeon as a prisoner until they return with their youngest brother. Now, on the way home, one of the boys opens the bags and finds the money, and all their hearts sink as they wonder, what in the world is God doing to us? In Canaan, they tell Israel everything, including the ruler's request for them to return with their youngest brother while he holds Simeon captive. When they all open their bags, to their amazement, they find all of their money. Oh, it grieves Jacob or Israel. And Joseph is gone, and now Simeon is gone. And he does not want to let Benjamin go, but the famine is not letting up, and they have to return to Egypt to buy more food. "We can't go without Benjamin," Judah warns his father. "Please allow him to return with us." Well, in Egypt, when Joseph sees Benjamin, he has a meal prepared for them to eat at noon in his own home. And when he arrives, they are all sitting in order of their birthright at the table. The sight of Benjamin is more than Joseph can bear, and his emotions overcome him, and he leaves the room to weep. When he returns to eat, he feeds them all, giving Benjamin 5 times the amount of food that he gives the others. And Joseph then eats by himself because Egyptian law does not allow or permit anyone to eat with Hebrews. Joseph orders their bags filled with grain, and as before, he sets a trap. He orders his golden cup placed in the bag of Benjamin. At daylight, the men start on their way, and Joseph sends his stewards to catch up with them and find his golden cup. Searching the bags, he finds it in Benjamin's bags, and the steward brings them all back to the city. There before Joseph, Judah begs for Benjamin's freedom, mentioning their father Israel. Joseph cannot control himself at this time, and he reveals that he is their brother. God had made me a father to the Pharaohs, and the ruler over all he has to preserve you. Go and get our father and bring him here. There are still 5 years of famine left. Do not delay, Joseph says. The Pharaoh hears about Joseph's family and is delighted. Send for them and bring them here, he says to Joseph. Joseph sends wagons and animals and provisions for the trip. Back at home, the boys tell Israel about Pharaoh's request, and they all pack and move to Egypt. In all, 70 of Israel's direct descendants, not including their wives, move to Egypt. It is 1903 BC. Joseph presents his father, Israel, to the Pharaoh upon his arrival. Pharaoh allows Joseph's family to settle in the land of Goshen, the finest land in the area for cattle, because they are all shepherds. Now in Goshen, Ramesses is one of Joseph's storehouse cities, and it has enough grain to care for his family and many, many more. And throughout the remaining 5 years, Joseph sells grain to all who need food. When the people's money runs out, Joseph trades grain for livestock. When they run out of livestock, Joseph trades grain for land. And by the end of the famine, Joseph has made the Pharaoh the wealthiest man in the world. Wealthy beyond measure, owning most of the land and the cattle in Egypt. The Bible records the names of Israel's direct descendants who moved to Egypt in that year. Like Esau's list, it's important because it tells us the players in God's story. When the famine is over, Israel and his family do not return to Canaan but remain with Joseph in Egypt. Still living in the land of Goshen, 17 years after moving to Egypt, Israel calls Joseph to his bedside. Please promise me you will not bury me in Egypt, but put me with my fathers, he begs Joseph, and Joseph agrees. Joseph then brings his two boys to Israel, placing Manasseh on Israel's right and Ephraim on his left. But Israel crosses his hands when he places them on their heads. Joseph is upset because the right hand is on the second son, Ephraim. It is not correct, father, Joseph says. No, son, it is correct. Ephraim will be greater than Manasseh, even though Manasseh will be a great nation too. Israel blesses Joseph with a double portion because of the two sons. Then he calls the other boys to hear his blessing on them. To Reuben he says, "You were first born, but you will not be first since you defiled my bed with my wife." To Simeon and to Levi, he says to them, "You have killed with the sword, and you will not be part of my counsel because of your anger. You are to be scattered." To Judah, he says, "You will be praised. You will stand on the neck of your enemies who will bow down to you. The scepter will be in your hand until Shiloh comes on the foal of a donkey, dressed in a robe the color of the blood of grapes. Zebulun, you will dwell at the seashore. Issachar, you are the strong donkey and will be a slave to forced labor. Dan, you will judge the people, a serpent or horned snake that bites the horse's heel and the riders fall backward. You need salvation. Gad, you will be raided and you will raid back. Asher, you will eat the rich food with all the royal dainties. Naphtali, you are the doe with beautiful words. Joseph, you are fruitful, firm, and agile. A crown is on your head to distinguish you from your brothers. Because of Joseph, Israel is more blessed than all his ancestors. Benjamin, you are a ravenous wolf, devouring the prey and dividing spoils. At the end of the blessings, he charges them all to bury him in the cave of his fathers in Canaan. He draws his last breath and he dies at the age of 147. Joseph orders the physicians to embalm him as if he were a pharaoh. The process takes 40 days. The official mourning period in the Egyptian culture is 70 days of weeping, mourning, and fasting, and so they do that. At the end of the official mourning period, Joseph asks Pharaoh, for permission to take his father to Canaan for burial. Pharaoh agrees, and all the family goes to bury Israel except the little ones and all their livestock and possessions. With the death of Israel, the brothers are fearful of the wrath of Joseph. However, Joseph calms their fears when he says, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good. Never fear, I will care for you and your little ones." Joseph is 57 years old when Israel dies. And after the death of his father, Joseph lives 53 more years to the age of 110, seeing three generations past his son Ephraim. When time nears for him to die, he too makes his sons promise to bury him with his father in Canaan. When he dies, the Egyptians embalm him like his father, and the Pharaoh of Egypt places him in a coffin. The boys do not take him to Canaan to bury him there as promised, but their descendants will bury him 400 years later. All of the 12 sons of Israel are in Egypt with their families, and the Lord is blessing them beyond measure. The Bible does not record the Lord's interaction with Israel's descendants after the death of Joseph until shortly before the birth of Moses in 1555 BC. Although he may be silent with his people in Egypt, the Lord is still dealing with man, and he focuses attention on a wonderful godly man in northwestern Mesopotamia named Job.